Hi, this is Casey Fox, host of Guilty Pleasures, every Wednesday night, 8 to 11 p.m. here on WORT. The Milwaukee Film Festival started April 24th and runs for 2 weeks. On my show, April 30th, I'll be featuring oodles of interviews with producers and directors of films coming up at the Oriental and Downer Theaters in the Lower East Side of Milwaukee. It'd be great to have you tuned in to find a movie right in your wheelhouse that you can maybe take your friends and or relatives to make a day of it in Milwaukee. So please tune in Wednesday, April 30th, 8 to 11 p.m. as I highlight week 2 of the Milwaukee Film Festival.
Welcome to Radio Literature, Madison's weekly look at poetry, fiction, nonfiction, theater, and experimental writing for readers of all ages. Settle in for a half hour of conversation on radio literature. Here's your host, Melvin Hinton.
Well, here we are again. It's Radio Literature time. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We have some well-known guests and special guests. Of course, all our guests are special, but they're especially special and well-known. And they are David Simmons and Alex Hancock. Hello, David and Alex.
Hello, Melvin.
Hello, Melvin.
I had a senior moment about 3 minutes ago. I thought, Alex Hancock, I couldn't remember David's name for about 20 seconds, and then it came back to me.
Doesn't that usually happen with names that you've said very often? Most likely.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, I wanted to ask our engineer, Daniel MacArthur, a question before we got started on our main menu for today. What was that music you were playing before we came on, the last minute or two, or 2-3 minutes?
Yeah, that was a track by Vampire Weekend called This Life. Mm. It was
Vampire Weekend.
Yeah, in the vein of Earth Day, which was what the Perpetual Notion Machine show was on.
Oh, I see. Okay, well, thank you.
Yeah, I wondered about that too.
Yeah. So, David, I thought I'd be able to see you, but I see the wall, I guess, behind you. Let's see. Why are we here today?
We can see you.
So we're here to talk about a show we're doing on Saturday evening called A Terrible Beauty is Born, The Easter Rising, Ireland, 1916.
I love that title. How did you, did that just come to you all of a sudden, or what?
That's the that's from a poem by Yeats that you'll hear Alex read in a moment.
Oh, okay. Okay, that's wonderful. Before we get into the details of this particular program, I've always wondered about this. How do you decide what program to do next? I mean, do you have a bucket list that you've created over the years and you just put your hand in and pick out one and say, I'm going to do this next, or what?
Well, it's kind of like that, although we ran into James Connolly in the Joe Hill show. James Connolly was a part of the Easter Rising, and he was also one of the founders of the Industrial Workers of the World in Chicago in 1905, and we had him in the Joe Hill show, and I was interested in his story, because just about all we say about him in the Joe Hill show is that he was tied to a chair and shot in 1916.
Hmm. So how old is this person that you just mentioned, Connolly?
He was in his 30s, early 40s at that time.
Oh, at that time. Okay. Yeah. Okay. And when was that? What year was this?
That was 1916.
1916. That's what I had in my mind, but I didn't want to say it because I thought I'd make a mistake. Mm-hmm. And I want to ask you, because so many people don't know about Fermat's Last Theater, and I wish more people did. I feel so fortunate that I was able to see some of the fully staged programs that you put on some years ago, and I was wondering if any of those had been filmed at all.
I don't think so. The Nikki Giovanni and the Langston Hughes.
No. The fully staged theater performances.
No.
You know, with people moving around and speaking their lines.
Merchant of Venice and Miss Julie and Carlos and Cressida.
They were not.
Yeah, the trial.
None of them were filmed.
No, it's very difficult to capture a stage performance unless you have three or four cameras that are moving around and zooming in and out. If you just have one static camera, it doesn't make good cinema.
Yeah. But, you know, one of the reasons I was thinking about this just recently is because I was thinking, oh, it'd be wonderful if Fromatzlas Theater could get a big grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities or one of those foundations like that. And if you had something from film, even if it wasn't a complete thing the way, you know, we'd like to see it, that would be good to include with an application. But anyway, that's food for thought.
Unfortunately, the National Endowment for the Humanities and the National Endowment for the Arts are in deep trouble.
Yeah. Now, for Much Less Theater, is that spelled at the end with T-R-E or T-E-R?
T-E-R. We use the American.
T-E-R. Okay.
We use the French mathematician, but the American spelling of theater.
Oh, yeah. So can you explain briefly for a lot of people who still don't know about Fromatzlas Theater, how you got this title and how the Fromatzlas Theater got started, just briefly.
Sure. Pierre Fermat was a French mathematician in the 17th century, and at the end of a book that he was reading about math, he wrote that he had a very clever solution to an algebraic problem, but the margin was too small for him to sketch out his proof. So Fermat's Theater is a play on words for Fermat's Theorem.
Mm-hmm.
And we got started in the summer of 2013 with a fully staged modern dress production of The Merchant of Venice, and Alex was Antonio, the merchant. And I was Shylock.
Oh, I really would like to have seen that. Any chance that will be repeated?
Oh, that'd be lovely. I wish you could see it too, Melvin.
Yeah, that would be a great thing. The actors were all scattered, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, maybe you could find some. If you do Shylock and Alex does Antonio, maybe you can. Maybe you can find a few other people to do the other parts. So I want to say that, Alex, I haven't seen you or heard your voice in so long. I've forgotten what you sounded like, and I'm sure I've forgotten what you look like. I can't see you right now.
Well, but I hope you can come to the show. I don't know if.
I'm hoping to.
Okay.
There's a better chance I can make this one than I could the last one.
Yeah.
So
that's good to hear.
We'll see.
That's good to hear.
We'll see. Yeah.
Alex looks younger than he used to.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Why is that? I mean, are you doing something?
Because I started out looking old. I don't know. I don't know.
But you've given me an idea. We could do a two-person A Merchant of Venice with just Shylock and Antonio.
And Antonio.
That's an idea. So before we get back to the Easter Rising, is it Rising or Uprising?
Rising.
Rising.
Yeah. Easter Rising. Alex, did you want to go into the theater from the time you were a child, or when did you get interested in the theater?
Goodness. Yeah, I was in some amateur. Well, I mean, everything I've done has been amateur, which simply means one who loves. So who's doing it out of love and not for money? I think I started being in shows when I was about 14 and through high school and college and then a long hiatus from that, but came back and got involved with the Young Shakespeare Players in the early aughts and they're still going as well. And I think they're the only other theater I know besides Vermont's that doesn't charge admission in Madison.
Yeah.
I mean, which is quite a big deal.
Yeah, I guess they're really busy. I did reconnect with them, I don't know, a year or two ago, mm-hmm. and then nothing. I said, please keep in touch. Send me an email. Let me know. And they mentioned two or three shows that were coming up, and then I didn't hear anything else, and I haven't gotten replies to my
I'll let them know. Yeah,
yes,
Richard, you probably heard Richard DePrima passed away, but
there was kind of a long hiatus
after that. But yeah, they're back.
But this is they got restarted again.
Right.
Okay, so let's see. So tell us about the show that's coming up. Is it this Saturday or the next Saturday?
This Saturday.
This Saturday.
Yeah.
April 26th.
Okay. So tell us about that.
So it's about a small group of people who declared that Ireland was free, and they mounted an uprising in Dublin. It was a small group of people because there was a split in the organization. The guns that they had been promised were at the bottom of the sea. Some people in the organization did not want to go forward, and some did, and so there was great confusion. But for 6 days, they mounted an insurrection in Dublin that changed the course of Irish history. They were all killed by firing squad, but the overreaction of the British caused great consternation in Irish society and led to civil war and the War of Independence, and within 6 or 7 years, Ireland, in fact, was free of British rule.
Mm.
So it's quite the story. And they were not military people for the most part. They were poets and actors, theater people. The Abbey Theater was a big factor, and Maud Gunn and Yeats and other people were very active in the cultural revival that was going on at that time as well.
Okay.
And it caused great consternation in the United States as well, especially in New York and Boston. New York, the population was at least one quarter Irish. And the New York Times ran a front page story about the uprising every day for 2 weeks, I think.
Yeah.
So.
Mm. So you promised that Alex would read the Yeats poem that you took your title from.
Yes. The first stanza.
Oh, just the first stanza. Okay. It's
Easter 1916. I have met them at close of day, coming with vivid faces from counter or desk among gray 18th century houses. I have passed with a nod of the head or polite, meaningless words, or have lingered a while and said polite, meaningless words, and thought before I had done of a mocking tale or a jibe to please a companion around the fire at the club, being certain that they and I but lived where motley is worn. All changed, changed utterly. A terrible beauty is born.
Hmm. So, a terrible beauty is born. The Easter Rising, Ireland, 1916, will be performed at the Art Lit Lab at 111 South Livingston Street this coming Saturday, April 26th at 7:30 p.m. Is that right?
That's correct.
That's it.
It's also Easter Saturday is when the Rising failed. They began on Easter Monday. And the insurrection lasted 6 days. So this is Thursday, so they were just about running out of ammunition right about now.
Mm.
And the show also features a wealth of wonderful music, as many Fermat shows do.
Yeah, I was going to ask
performed
you
by Tom Castle.
About that. So there are two performers, that's Alex Hancock and Tom Castle.
Yes.
Is that right?
Right. I'm the narrator, and Tom does the singing, guitar playing, concertina playing. Yeah. In fact, we have
Go ahead.
Sample? We have a
Yeah.
A recording of Tom?
Yeah, so I was going to ask you, can you say a little bit about who Tom Castle is, and then we'll listen to the recording you have?
Sure. Tom is a well-known Madison-based a folk singer, tall ship captain, singer, a guitarist, and he's taken our Joe Hill show to 9 different locations. Many on the East Coast. He went to the Woody Guthrie Center in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And we have a gig booked for New York City next year. And we're hoping to organize a West Coast tour as well. But it's a great show if you haven't seen it.
Okay. So what are we going to listen to now?
I believe this is Foggy Dew, which is about the rising.
As down one glen one Easter morn to a city fair rode I, the armed lines of marching men in squadrons passed me by. No pipe did hum, no battle drum did sound its loud tattoo, but the Angelus bells, or the Liffey swells, rang out in the foggy dew. And back through the glen I rode again, my heart with grief was sore, for I parted then with valiant men who I never shall see no more. But to and fro in my dreams I go, I kneel and pray for you. For slavery fled, O glorious dead, when ye fell in the foggy dew.
So that was Tom Castle, Foggy Dew. At least part of it, which you will hear, and I suppose you'll hear even more of that song and others on Saturday, April 26th at Art Lit Lab at 111 South Livingston Street.
That's right. You can't have a show about Ireland without much music.
Right.
Oh, yeah. I knew what I was going to ask you earlier. Does either of you have any connection to Ireland at all in your genealogy, or have you studied there, lived there at all?
Yeah, my father's side is from Ireland, like 3 or 4 generations back.
Mm.
And I don't have any ancestry connection, but I'm absolutely crazy about James Joyce. Of course, he left and only went back once, but I certainly have learned a lot about Ireland from reading him.
So I am so happy to hear your voice. I don't think I've heard your voice very much, because I remember when I first met you, Alex, of course, I didn't know who you were. But all I know is that I was very nervous. I didn't know who, I didn't know any of the people that I was performing with.
Oh.
I met them half an hour before I arrived. Mm-hmm. I mean, before we went on stage.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I had 3 or 4 requests. I don't know, where's the bathroom? Can you set up the mic? And I remember you very silently, whenever I had a request, you silently fulfilled that request.
Mm.
And everything was perfect.
Oh, and I never said anything.
I thought, who is this? Well, I mean, you said a word or two.
Right.
But
right.
You weren't, I mean, you were just so low-key. I assumed you didn't want to interfere with anything. So
was this, but I just, Melvin, may I ask, was this the James Baldwin show?
Yeah, the first James Baldwin.
The first James Baldwin show.
An Evening with James Baldwin.
Right.
And of course, it had been years since I had done anything in public.
Oh, I did not know that. Wow, it didn't show.
So I didn't know, you know, what my voice was going to sound like. I didn't know what the other people were doing, what they would sound like. And so I just, you made me feel very comfortable.
Oh, good. Thank you. I'm glad I could do that.
And so, yeah.
Well, having heard your voice for many, many years on the radio, I knew what you would sound like.
Well, of course,
but I had never gotten to see it live. So that was wonderful.
Yeah.
That show was one of my favorites.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the only one we didn't record.
Well.
And that was for copyright reasons? Or
no, just because it was a last-minute affair.
Oh, it was a last-minute affair.
I just met the bass player like 15 minutes before the show started.
But I really enjoyed working with him. I can't remember his name right now.
Oliver Gomez.
Oliver Gomez, yes.
He graduated from the Eastman School of Music and is doing I'm not sure what.
So do you know if he's come back to Madison or if he's somewhere else?
I don't know. I did know a while ago, but I'm not sure where he's at now.
Oh, yeah.
Probably in grad school.
Yeah, yeah. I came across a manuscript, I'll call it. I'm not sure what to call it. It's score. Odetta, the folk singer, the legendary folk singer, recorded an album, of course, decades ago, which I came across in Germany, and it was Christmas folk carols or something like that. And I love that album, and I had when I actually performed two songs from it once or twice, and I was a friend of mine accompanied me on the string bass. That's the only accompaniment she has on the album.
Oh my goodness.
And it's Bill Lee is the bass player, the father of Spike Lee. And
my goodness.
And I was wishing I had that. And then the other day, well, about 4 weeks ago, I came across this manuscript and these songs have been transcribed. And I think that Oliver Gomez must have transcribed them for me. And I wasn't sure. I thought, well, where did this come from? Because I remembered talking to him about it. So he must have done it, and I just slipped my mind.
Goodness.
Yeah.
So Spike Lee's dad is a bass player, or was a bass player, and Oliver Gomez, another bass player, transcribed the song.
He was very famous as a bass player.
I'd heard of Bill Lee as a bass player, but I did not know he was Spike's father.
Alex.
Yes.
You've done theater, and I believe you've written stuff, and you've done translations. Have you directed in the theater?
Not recently. The most recent writing I did was an adaptation of Kafka's The Trial.
Production we did in 2016. Love that production.
Yeah, that was a remarkable production.
Go ahead.
Well, I didn't not that it was a remarkable adaptation, but the performance I thought was very very compelling.
It was. I remember I wanted to see it again. So I'm wondering, of all your different activities, I'm sure there are things that I'm not familiar with at all. What gives you the most satisfaction, or what has given you the most satisfaction?
Oh, goodness. Besides fatherhood, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, you know.
Yeah. Whatever. Yeah. That's what everybody says. If they
not talking about being a father.
Right. Right. Or, that is a remarkable question.
Like
I certainly love acting more than I ever had realized until I got back into it at the Young Shakespeare Players. I love the immediacy of theater and being face to face with the audience and never knowing what's going to happen next. It's what I love about going to the theater. And, I don't think there's anything that can match it, except, of course, musical performance, which I have no ability whatsoever. But just that sense of you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah,
It can be terrifying.
Yeah, I suppose that music, I suppose it's what your ear is attuned to. Of course, I love music. That's, I guess, probably my first love. But some artists are so compelling that I think they will stand up against any kind of comparison. I just remember, I discovered Judi Dench, for example, in a, I don't know if you call it a sitcom or what. It was a British series.
Oh, was that As Time Goes By?
Yes.
Oh, yes, I love
And I just
show.
Couldn't believe, I thought, who is this woman? I saw the name, but I mm-hmm. didn't know anything about her. I'd never seen or heard her say anything before. I thought, who is this that is here and defies you to have for a moment to think that she's an actress?
Right.
That this is not real life.
Right, and defies you to not pay attention to her.
Yes, yes. I couldn't turn it off. I couldn't stop mm-hmm. watching and listening. And I've watched the whole series twice.
Yeah, that's a wonderful series.
And I still have never had a boring moment mm-hmm. in the whole mm-hmm. thing, even though sometimes I knew what was coming.
Right.
I'm wondering another question for David. I wrote your name down so I wouldn't forget it again.
Well, that's good.
I think you started alluding to this before, or maybe talking about it. I was going to ask you to tell the audience, those people who don't know too much about Fermat's Last Theater, how or where the some of the work is archived. Where they can go to it.
Sure, fermatstheater.org is the website, and most of the shows in some form or other are there, some with audio, some just with a script or the poster and the cast. But the Joe Hill Show has audio, and we did a short radio play by Albert Maltz, one of the Hollywood Ten, called The Morrison Case, and the audio from that is on the web as well, and that's pretty amazing.
With Tom as Mr.
That's right.
Morrison.
Yeah, yeah. So Albert Maltz was one of the Hollywood Ten, and Patrick Chura, who is a professor of English at the University of Akron, found this in the Maltz archives. And it had never been performed in English. Strangely enough, it was performed in German in the 50s and broadcast on East German radio. It's just a strange little factoid.
Yeah. So this Saturday, April 26th, at 7:30 p.m., you will see Tom Castle and Alex Hancock in Fermat's Last Theater's production of A Terrible Beauty Is Born, The Easter Rising, Ireland, 1916. And this is at the Art Lit Lab at 111 South Livingston Street. Anything to add now, last 20 seconds?
Free admission.
Free admission, right. As always.
Yeah. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Alex Melvin. Hancock, it's great to see you again.
Simmons. Yeah. Although I can't see you, but
well,
I hope to,
well, we got to see you. Oh, that's great this to hear Saturday. Your voice, too.
I doubt that I'll make it this Saturday, but do you have anything else coming up already? We only have 10 seconds.
I'm working on a show about Vietnam for the fall.
Okay. So we'll talk about that in the near future. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Melvin.
Oh, and join us next week for the poet Fabu and the jazz pianist Jane Jane Reynolds.
Oh my goodness, what a combination.
Preview their upcoming performance at the Kennedy Center. See you next week
exists.
At the same time.
That's great.
Right, thank you, Melvin.
Thank you, Melvin.
Good night.
Good night.
You've been listening to Radio Literature, a weekly program on WORT 89.9 FM Madison. We are listener-sponsored community radio. Join us again next Thursday at 7:30 for more features of local, national, and international interest.
Get ready for Wartstock on Sunday, May 18th in Warner Park. We have a great lineup of music this year. Bluegrass from Annie and the Okies starts the show at noon. Cuban Conjunto from Revolu will get you up and dancing. The Dirk Quinn Band kicks up a jazz fusion jam in Philadelphia, sponsored by Bluestem Jazz. Smart Cookie is up next with Smooth Groove Pop, and headlining the show is Stephen Cooper and the Nobody Famous, featuring the vocal powerhouse Katrina DeVille and a 10-piece band blasting scorching rhythm and blues. Madison Homebrewers will be back with the 21st annual No Crap on Tap, a rotating selection of beers, ciders, and seltzers from more than 20 local breweries. There will be a delicious array of food vendors to satisfy any craving, and local artisans with beautiful items to browse and buy. Nonprofit tablers will have information on getting involved in the community, and the art exploration area will nourish your creative side. The prize raffle offers concert tickets, hotel stays, merch, and more. Wartstock is proudly sponsored by Summit Credit Union, MG&E Foundation, Dane Arts, Harmony Bar, Madison Homebrewers and Tasters Guild, WSUM, Hoyos Consulting, and Bluestem Jazz. See you there!